We're live.
As developers, we get better over time. Each year, we look back on what we built the previous year, and we see the ways that we could have improved it. We notice ways that we could have made a process more performant or a UI more streamlined. Since we spent the last year honing our development skills and increasing our knowledge, we can easily identify pain points in our past work. It's one of the natural flows of development. When building something new, however, you don't have to worry about all of the ways that developers and users may be using the feature since it doesn't exist yet. Building new features is easy. However, when improving an existing feature, you have to be very mindful of what developers have built on top of the feature and how users may be using it, because of the last thing you want to do is fatally break thousands or millions of sites during an upgrade when you push out a release. Refinement is excruciatingly difficult, especially when striving for complete backwards compatibility. I'm Pippin Williamson, and the Dradcast starts now.
In the bowels of WordPress Nation.
All operators are busy at this time. Please hold.
For the Dradcast. Here to talk WordPress news, events, and fizzy pop with community leaders, ultimately letting smarter people run the show weekly. We bring you your favorite 10 panel moments, Brad Williams and AR Meta. Sit back, folks, grab something to sip on, and get ready to press on. The Dradcast starts now.
We as well here at Dradcast trying to make things backwards compatible or as easy as can be, so we're taking it old school with a guy that's been on the show before. We're excited to have him. We'll get there in a second. I want to talk to you, Bradford. What is going on, brother? You are like in some crazy conference of the future.
Yes, I am in the future. I'm at a, of all places, a Microsoft conference. So yeah, Worldwide Partner Conference, which sounds odd, right? Like, why the hell am I at a Microsoft conference? But it's actually amazing because they have an entire open source initiative that Microsoft is pushing. And it's been amazing. They have they've been doing presentations around open source. I met the multiple people that work in the open source departments. Microsoft actually has 45 people around the world dedicated to open source and how they can work with these projects better, which kind of blew my mind when I found that out. So it's been an amazing event. I've had a lot of fun. I'm here representing WordPress. I think the only WordPress person here, but it's been a lot of fun. But definitely check it out. Go to Microsoft.com/openness, and they have a whole website and blog and everything dedicated to how they're kind of contributing back to open source projects. And it's really neat to see a company like Microsoft kind of you know, get out there in the open source world. I don't think a lot of people realize they are.
Well, you've been doing a lot of stuff with WordPress and their Azure platform in terms of WDS and some of the projects you've been working on with Microsoft. That's exciting in itself. We'll see where the future holds for these big tech and software companies and the open source movement. I want to take it back old school. I'm talking about Magic Johnson number 32. That was the episode that Mr. Pippin Williamson was on, and we have him back. So only a handful of repeat guest hosts, and here we have it. We're here with one and only my favorite robot in the WordPress world, Pippin Williamson. What's going on, brother?
Hey, everybody. Not too much. Sitting here drinking a good beer and happy to be on the Dradcast.
Awesome to have you.
Back on the Dradcast. Yes, elite class, man. You're one of only, maybe five people that have...
I think so. We'll have to go back and look, but top five.
Well, awesome. I'm honored.
And a lot has changed. I mean, we had you, like Trey said, we had you on episode 32, which honestly wasn't that long ago, about 20 episodes, but a lot has changed in that short amount of time. So I'm really excited to get into it and hear about some of the new projects you got going on, maybe a new product or two, and how everything else is going for you.
Yeah, happy to share.
Before we do that, we need to get to the really important topic, which is, what are you sipping on?
Hey, what you sipping on?
All right. Well, you're sipping as it plays, so you must have something good over there. What are you drinking tonight, Pippin?
This is a Flemish sour from Belgium. It's, wow. If you like sours, it's pretty awesome. I can't tell you much more than that because it's all in French and I don't speak French. And so you really don't want to hear me try and pronounce the name of this thing. But it's pretty phenomenal.
That's awesome. I don't think anyone's ever drank a sour beer on our show, so that might be a
first. That is a first. I think that is a first.
They're by far one of my favorite kinds.
Oh man, that's great. Well, I snuck down to the hotel bar a little bit ago and got a nice Scotch here. I got a Glenlivet 12-year I made it double because it's a nice long show, so this should keep me nice and toasty throughout the episode.
And forever afterwards, this should be pretty interesting. Myself will be competing at the North American tournament here in about 3 weeks, so I've cut it dry again. Canada dry, in fact, and we're rocking a Diet Ginger Ale, so there you have it.
All right, Jay, we'll let it slide, I guess. You know, you're training. You got big things going on as a Dreadcast, so I guess.
Trying to compete, man. Trying to compete. We're going to get it. Man, I'm excited to hear from you because, look, you're a robot. There isn't an episode, really, that goes by, Pippin, that your name doesn't come up these days, it seems. So I think you're gonna end up having to be, like, the third player on Dreadcast at some point, like, exclusively. Because apparently everybody wants to chat about you, and I can dig it. Now, Brad mentioned we've had you on the show before. We've had a great interview with you. So I don't know. We need to get back into the history of where you started and came from. But I'd love to hear a bit about what you're doing with EDD and some of the other projects and initiatives you got going on. Because you're nonstop. We're getting ready to go on the show, and you're like, good, I got like 20 minutes. I'm going to code some more. Let's get to it, brother. What's going on?
Well, it's been – last couple of months have been pretty busy. Two big things. I was working on Easy Digital Downloads version 2.0 for about 6 months straight or so. And simultaneously, I was working on a new product that's a complementary product called Affiliate WP, which is a affiliate management plugin for WordPress, which just happens to go really hand-in-hand with e-commerce. So we got Affiliate WP launched in, I think, May or so, and that's been a partner project with a friend, Andrew Monroe, or Sue Moby, on Twitter. And we got EDD 2.0 pushed out the door in early June in the middle of Beach Press. So the last about 3 weeks, aside from traveling, I've just been kind of sitting back and relaxing after getting that all pushed out.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about Affiliate WP. So like you said, you released this shortly after the last time we had you on, so we didn't talk about it. We didn't even know about it. It was very hush-hush. So first I want to start off with talking about your little monster friend here. So anyone that's familiar with EDD, is there a name for this monster creature that you have on all your products?
So the little red guy, his name is Alf. You can see him on the website as well. He is a complement to the EDD monster, whose name is Ed. And he's just our general mascot for the plugin and for the business.
I love him. I think you're awesome.
I really like him. I think it's a fun little goofy touch that helps make it more memorable.
It's a branding thing. Like, if anyone's caught the episode we do with Yoast, he's very big on branding. Everyone always asks him about kind of the caricatures that he has across all of his products. He does it, one, to be fun, but two, as a branding thing. Like, when you see those and
absolutely, you
know, on Ed, like, immediately if I saw that on its own on some third-party website, I would think, that's EDD. That's Pippin. That's related to Pippin in some way. You know, like, I would immediately, it would click that is a brand for you. Yep. You know,
so and that was the ultimate goal with him as well. Yeah. I mean, we get people that are kind of laughing or like, what in the world is this little blue thing sitting in the bottom of your website? But you know what? It means that it caught their attention.
Yeah.
So when they see it again, they may not immediately remember what it is, but they're going to recognize it from somewhere. It's going like to ring that bell.
It's a love-hate thing. Like, for whatever reason, my wife does not like the blue monster. I don't know why. She gets very fired up about it, and I love it. So it's pretty.
That's funny. That's all right.
But I guess enough about your logos. Let's talk about the actual product. So tell us about Affiliate WP. You launched it. When did you launch it again?
I think we launched it in May. It was either April or May.
In May. So it's only a few months. How's it been doing so far?
It's been going really well so far. It was one of the nice advantages of Affiliate WP, at least from the developer side, is that since it was all brand new, we were able to sit down and really think about it in depth and think about the way that we wanted to structure the APIs for it, the code base, the data schemas, et cetera, the features that we're going to build. And so that was fun for me as a developer. Beyond that, it's gone really well as a product. It's been great because it's a really nice complement to EDD, because a lot of people that are running their own e-commerce store want to have an affiliate system as well. But it's not just for EDD. It's actually a general affiliate plugin that works with all of the WordPress e-commerce plugins as well as all of the membership plugins, which from the commercial side really opens up our user base as well. And so overall, I'm really, really happy with it.
Yeah, so what's it been like? So EDD is kind of obviously your flagship product, Easy Digital Downloads. You've had that running for a while. You've built quite a community and a marketplace around that. So now you have affiliate WP. So now you have a second, you know, a second product out there. What's it like kind of juggling, you know, kind of two products, two communities, two support platforms? You know, what's that been like so far?
It's been awesome, to be honest. I mean, there's parts that are really difficult, especially when we start thinking about the customer support aspect, and the fact that it's two separate platforms. And so if we, whether it's in the support side or in the actual development side, if we fix a problem in one, we have to fix a problem in the other, assuming that they both have it. But it's also been really fun because we can look at them completely differently. So, for example, when we launched Affiliate WP, it gave me the opportunity to really kind of reimagine how the support side of the business works. And so we use a completely different support system, and we handled support differently. This is the first plugin and the first product that I've ever worked on where I'm hardly touching support at all. I've always been very hands-on with everything that I've done, sometimes because I'm the only person involved with the project, but this is the first time that I've literally been completely hands-off of the support, aside from the occasional ticket here and there. And that's been a cool experience for me, for sure.
How does that structure continue to expand, right? I mean, so now down the road, maybe you have three or four. How do you guys really start to look at the overlap that you see? Even though they are different platforms, it certainly is a challenge when you start to see different support systems, different resources around those things. How do you start to manage those in a way that makes sense for the overall organization, which in turn allows you to maybe make it an efficient machine for every product that you're managing and supporting?
I don't think there's really a straightforward answer to that. As an example, like in the support side of things, EDD is all managed through a custom BBPress setup where we have a whole lot of custom plugins that we've put in there, and we've completely tweaked the BBPress experience and the way that it's used as support administrators to work pretty well for our flow. Affiliate WP is all run on top of Help Scout, which if anybody's used Help Scout, it's a really phenomenal system. And so taking what I learned from Affiliate WP and figuring out realizing how efficient that is and the extra tools that they give us in terms of the reporting makes me then look back at EDD and say, well, maybe we could improve our workflow over here in this way or this way. And then they overlap in a lot of other ways too. And not just where there's literal connection between the products.
Of course.
Development-wise, because Affiliate WP was built from the ground up 2 years after EDD, I learned a lot of things. I learned things that just ways of doing things, maybe things that I had never even thought about before, particularly when we're talking about like database schemas. And so today, just as an example, I was working on an improvement to EDD related to a customer's API. And I was able to write 300 lines of code in about 20 minutes because I copy and pasted it from Affiliate WP, because I'd already taken the time in Affiliate WP to figure out how this thing needed to work. In this case, it was an API to interact with the database. That was already all done. And so that lended really well to an improvement in EDD. I think as we have separate products, whether they interface with each other or not, there's always things to be learned from experiences in each one, whether that be in customer support, in development, in branding, every aspect.
So in terms of business model, it seems like around easy digital download, you really kind of, I don't know if perfect is the right word, but you really kind of lock into something that works, right? Like you built kind of this core framework that you, at least in the easy digital downloads, you give it away, and then you kind of have this developer or this, you know, developer community that builds add-ons, whether it's you or third-party add-ons are being developed. With Affiliate WP, it's actually a little bit different. So the base is not free, right? So the base is paid. There's no free version of the actual base. But then you also have kind of the add-ons. I'm curious, what was the reasoning behind doing that versus just kind of releasing Affiliate WP, the core is free, and then just kind of charging for the add-ons or extensions?
There's a couple of reasons, and I'll have, if I go too long, cut me off because I can talk on this topic forever.
I've had a little setback.
Number one is to try something else. I had great success with EDD. We were able to build it into a very successful company and a product that has worked very, very well for us. I was not sure if that would lend itself well to Affiliate WP or not. I think it very well could have, But I wanted to try something a little different. And so we went with another similar model that a lot of people are familiar with, which is, I'll just say, the Gravity Forms model, where you have that paid plugin, and then at, you have tiers of licensing and tiers of pricing. And people who purchase the top tier can get access to all of the additional features that you release via add-ons. The biggest reasons that I did that, aside from just wanting to try something else, was there's an inherent need in features that you need as an e-commerce platform. Every single person running e-commerce needs to have a payment processor. Now, whether that payment processor is Stripe, or whether it's PayPal, or two-checkout, every single customer needs one. And that means that you have an inherently larger user base or potential customer base that are going to purchase those extensions. Now, in affiliate marketing, you have to be a little more with affiliate management. There's not necessarily those inherent features that are needed by every single user of the plugin. I mean, aside from the basic affiliate tracking. And so I wasn't sure that there was as much possibility to build a good free plugin that had those paid upgrades that would have a successful revenue stream. I don't know that if I realized that initially when I first launched it, but that's something that's occurred to me later on. And that's something that's occurred to me quite a bit as various people from around the community have come out with their own freemium model plugins and have had either good or little success with it. And so basically I figured out that in order to have a successful freemium project, you have to have that inherent need of features that people are going to pay for. I don't think affiliate.
And I think community is part of that too, right? Like, you could have the best product in the world, but ultimately, if people aren't using it and you're not building kind of a developer community around it, it's going to fail, you know?
Absolutely. And that was something that EDD lended itself to really, really well. And the model of EDD worked because we had that free plugin that anybody could jump in and contribute to on GitHub or on WordPress.org. And we lose that generally with affiliate WP the moment that we make the base product premium. Now, this is not really something that's known that much about affiliate WP, but it's actually 100% open source. If you want, you can go find it on GitHub, you can fork it, and you can use it exactly as is, and you can submit pull requests to affiliate WP if you want. And most premium plugins are not fully open source like that. And we did that because we wanted to encourage that development community.
Well, I think another thing to concentrate on there too, or that you're doing a pretty good job of, is not so much just the feature sets and what it does there, but onboarding folks, right? So let's make it one easy for them to get there and to enable them to integrate to the favorite e-commerce stuff, right? So, all right, if we limit it just to EDD, okay, that's great. We have a good audience, but what if we want people to use it that are on other platforms currently? And heck, it's just be a nuisance and overhead for them to do a full migration of everything over. But the actual affiliate portion of it makes sense for them. So you're doing integration from Member Mouse to Shop to, I mean, you've got Gravity Forms integration in there, WP e-commerce, iThemes Exchange. I mean, that's pretty sick. That in itself is just a big, I think for me, a big entryway, a gateway for folks to go, okay, at least if I go that route, I have the ability to move over and it should be fairly seamless.
We really wanted to create an affiliate platform that worked for everyone, no matter who you are, or what you're selling in WordPress. We really wanted it to be something that you could use regardless of your platform. Now, obviously, there's going to be platforms that we can't support because there's 50 e-commerce plugins for WordPress. But we want to support the major ones.
Sure.
And we've gotten requests for new ones, and we've added them. It also, from the commercial side of things and looking at it from a business perspective, it more than quadruples our user base. Our potential customer base.
One-click migration—that's a huge feature. I see you have that with does it with a couple different softwares now. Is there any intent to expand that to other affiliate solutions out there?
We started it with Affiliates Pro, which is another plugin, and we now have an add-on that allows you to do it with eJunkie. That was actually written by a third-party developer, and we're going to add one for forget the name. It's from Tips and Tricks is the website. And mostly we're going to add that because we had a customer request it today. And I would like to support anybody else who wants to make that migration. Now, the presence of that migration isn't to say anything bad or against those other platforms. That's entirely for the customer to decide. If they want to use one platform or the other, that's up to them. But we do want to try and make it easy for them to make the choice that we're trying to give them.
So we have a question from the chat room, Mr. Brian Krogsgaard. Wants to know, what kind of traction has the plugin gotten for more generic websites looking for self-hosted affiliate options versus selling to WP product businesses? Do you have any kind of stats around usage and who's using it, maybe inside and outside of the WordPress product space?
I can tell you, I can think of a couple of WordPress websites that are using it off the top of my head, other WordPress products. In terms of the overall maybe division between WordPress and non-WordPress products, I don't have a number at the top of my head. I can tell you the majority of people I work with on a day-to-day basis are not WordPress companies.
Yeah, it's interesting. And it can be tricky kind of tracking some of that stuff. You know, I mean, there's some base level tracking you can do to at least figure out what site it's installed on, but it doesn't always answer the questions of what exactly it's just being used for.
Right. We have quite a few ebook authors on it. We have people that are selling information. Like contact information, we have all sorts of things. I mean, some of your standard software projects. I think we had a music person on there the other day in our support forums. So all different kinds.
Very cool. So let's talk about the other big news that's happened since the last time we had you on, which is the release of Easy Digital Downloads 2.0, and that came out back in June 3rd. So a little bit over a month ago. It hasn't been that long, so hopefully the dust has settled a little bit. But tell us a little bit about 2.0 and what went on, how it went down, how it built. I know you definitely said you spent a lot of time on it. So,
well, aside from maybe 1.0 and maybe a couple of releases in between there, 2.0 was one of my favorites that we've done. We spent about 6 months building it. There was, I think, 150-some bugs and improvements put into it, separate issues. The reason it was my favorite was because we said, we're not going to introduce new features. There was, I think, two new features that were introduced in 2.0, and they were actually pretty minor features. They weren't even features that the majority of the users will use. We spent the rest of the time and all of those other 150-ish issues improving things, getting a lot of refinement put in there. Everything from improving the way that discount codes are validated on checkout to improving the way that a couple of APIs work in the background, improving the REST API, improving performance, improving the UI here and there. All of these different kinds of things that can really easily get kind of pushed back and back into the shadows and not get a whole lot of attention when you're working on building new features. I think it's so easy to get caught up in introducing feature X and feature Y when you're doing this development. And you're getting ready to push out a new thing because people are asking for these features. People, for example, want the ability to import price variations into their products. People want the ability to have reporting on discount codes. People want the ability to do this or that. And it's really easy to get caught up in just building those new features and forgetting about improving what you already have. Early on, when EDD first launched, it was based around making it easy to sell digital products. And so the entire feature set of the plugin was, here you have a really simple product page with a purchase button, a shopping cart, and a download link. And that was it. That was the entire plugin. And I think as we got closer and closer to 2.0, we realized that we kind of gotten away from that, and it really wasn't necessarily that easy to use anymore. So the easy part of the name kind of went away. And I wanted to get back to that.
DigitalDownloads.com.
Right, exactly. Hard digital downloads is, I think, better.
Make sure you lock that one down.
He's like, hey, I already bought 5 variations of the domain. We're good to go.
Lukewarm digital downloads.
I really liked focusing on refining things. It was cool to get back and address some of my own code demons in the plugin. And it's something that I think a lot of people don't necessarily appreciate that much. And I'm not just in EDD, but in general. I don't think people appreciate iteration and improvements as much. I mean, they really like them because when somebody realizes, oh, this is easy to use, or this is pretty, or this is smooth, that's awesome, and they really, really like it. But when they see a big release that just makes a few refinements, they're like, oh, well, that doesn't excite me. And I think that's kind of sad.
So what was the reception like when you released 2.0?
I mean, it was good. Everybody who left feedback said, oh, I really like this. These are great. It is a nice improvement. But there was unlike most of the time when you have a big release that introduces a big new major feature, you usually get somebody that says, like, yes, I'm so happy to have this feature. Like, I've been waiting for this feature, especially if they are feature introductions that people have requested a lot over the past, in history. And so we didn't have any of that because there weren't any of those major features. Yeah, we had people that were like, oh, yeah, the improved polish is nice and this little thing is nice here. But if we compare it to some of the past major releases, there wasn't negative feedback, but feedback was much quieter. I will say, though, that because of that refinement, the amount of support that was due to updates or issues with updates or anything like that was dramatically lower than any release I think we've ever had.
I'd say that's a win. So what's next, Mr. Pippin? You've got a bunch of awesome stuff going on here, two major platforms that you're working on with EDD and Affiliate WP. What should we expect next? And any breaking news for the Dragcast that you want to throw out today? Because we'd be down to share it with the world, all six people that listen to us.
All of us.
Breaking news-wise, there's not too much going on over here. We're traveling quite a bit. We're heading up to WordCamp Omaha, heading up to WordCamp New York.
Yes, I will see you in New York.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one.
Beyond that, I'm really, really looking forward to the next couple of months of kind of slowing down a little. My wife and I have a baby coming in October, and so we're trying to stop traveling a little bit, slow down, and relax a bit.
I can dig that. Well, I think with that, we appreciate your time, and I think we rock and roll into this week's Pressing Topics.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. Well, WordPress is turning 4.0 to be exact, with beta 1 ready to rock. Are you guys testing any of the new fun stuff locally yet?
Yeah, I've been playing with it just about every day. It's really nice. I'm really liking it so far.
I think we'll get into that discussion here in a minute about actually very similar to what you experienced with EDD 2.0 in terms of, you know, when a major release comes out and people aren't seeing all these crazy new features, maybe it just doesn't get the same level of coverage or excitement that you would expect, even though there may have been an amazing amount of work and effort put into refining things that just needed refinement. This seems to be one of those releases with WordPress, and I'm excited about it. I like to see some of the stuff that they're refreshing, even down from the editor to the tiny MCE views. I think there's some really cool stuff going on here that are going to be very important down the road as we start to see new features. What do you guys think about some of the hoopla going on around this? I mean, there was a post released on, you know, a cite the source. That's what I'm going to do here, so take it for what it's worth. WPMUdev.org, which gets a lot of flack for some of the, some of the discussions that they put out. They put out a post saying that, hey, it's... the 4.0 is hugely underwhelming. Did you guys take the same tack there, or is it just a really crappy article? Not really appreciating what's happened in terms of this development life cycle.
Yes. I feel like in the community, WPMU Dev kind of has a bit of a reputation for these kind of link bait, you know, posts. Like, they really the extra mile to make sure whatever they write generally about something new, maybe a new release or a new product, whatever it may be. They always take the stance that's more controversial than not, and I think, I mean, it's a site that's trying to bring traffic to ultimately sell their services and plugins, so I understand why they try to do that. I just think it's the community knows what they're doing, get it, and so it's really kind of laughable and a bit of a joke about some of the content they pump out, and this blog post is really no different. It's almost as if they don't even really understand how versions and WordPress work.
You know, this is nothing new with WordPress. I mean, it happened, I think it's happened at every .0 release where, you know, oh my gosh, the sky's falling. It doesn't have every awesome enhancement that we were hoping for, new features, but we're not on a traditional life cycle. So the 4.0 doesn't mean much more than 4.1, if you will. It's just the way that our cycle works. And historically, that's been the same. It's not anything new. And a lot of these folks that are causing, you know, all the discussion and all this all these crappy posts. Really, they've been around the community for a long time, so it's nothing new. They're just really trying to influence folks, I think, in a very poor way.
So, I mean, they... Go ahead.
I don't want to say too much about WPMU in my own personal opinions. I have some good ones and some bad ones. But I do want to point out that their opinion and what they've raised in the post is actually not, I mean, it's not just limited to WPMU. I've seen other people mention those comments as well. WP Tavern wrote a post recently showing the new improvements made to the plugin installers and the plugin list pages. And there was like five people within the first hour that says, oh, this is coming in 4.0. Like, why do we care about this? Where's our new feature? And so it's not, I think it's a very valid concern that people do bring up, and not just for link bait. Now, I won't say anything else about that post, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I 3.0 spoiled a little bit, because obviously 3.0 was a big release, and it just happened to be 3.0. I don't think it was because it was 3.0, but the fact that you had the multi-site merge and CPTs, those two alone, those could have been, you know, flagship features in their separate releases, and they happened it up in the same one, so it made it a pretty big release. So I think it sets a stage for that expectation. I guess if you don't understand how the versioning works with new releases, but back to your point, Pippin, about kind of, you know, these behind the scenes, you know, refinements and optimizations that are just generally overlooked. You know, it's too bad, because it happens a lot. I mean, and I remember BuddyPress 2.0. You know, Boone spent a lot of time working on performance, and he put out this great post on bpdevil.wordpress.com about the focus on performance and how he was really kind of going through some of these complex queries and trying to optimize them as best he can. He put out some numbers about he's shaving, you know, all this time off of monster queries or pulling back large amounts of data. And that's something that 99% of BuddyPress users will never know, right? They won't know that all that was gone into the 2.0 release. You know, it's like, oh, we optimized the queries. They don't know what that means. You know, they just want to know, hey, does it work? Is it fast? And they're more focused on the visuals. Like, what do I see that looks different? You know, not the underlying, like, you know, advances in the code. So it's unfortunate, but I think it's a reality in the world we're in, where the non-technical people, they're not going to, unless something changes or looks different or acts different, that's all they see and that's all they know. Like the under the hood stuff, it may look great in a bullet point list, but they don't understand it, you know, and they don't get it, even though us as devs, we do. So it's sad, but it is what it is, I guess.
Boo. Well, hey, look. Plugin installs getting a refresh. The experience there is going to be sprucing up a little bit. There's going to be more to come there. I mean, so Foundation has some good changes. A couple tickets out on that. Meteor Library now has a grid view. In addition to the existing list view, which I think a lot of people prefer having that grid view. There's a lot of cool changes, I think, that are coming to it. So, sure, it's not going to clean the world's water supplies, but certainly some really neat additions in 4.0.
I think it's important to understand, like, the dev cycles are much quicker now, too. I mean, they're trying to do, what, four-month dev cycles? So that's fast. Like, I'm pretty confident if we went back and looked at 3.0, it was not a three-month dev cycle.
Well, and if you really think about it, so all of these other major features that people have been calling for in 4.0 and we're just wondering, is 4.0 going to be this huge new feature release? If all of those were to be put in, it would be another 4 or 5 months before it's done.
Yeah,
4.1 comes out.
4.0, and then 4.1, and then even 4.2 will be out before those, and then you have maybe some of those features. And so, version number, who cares? I mean, overall, the features or the updates are still going to come at the same pace. They're just coming in smaller chunks.
There you have it.
Either way, it's a new version on the horizon.
Yes, indeedy. Well, I like it. I'm looking forward to 4.0 and 4.1 beyond that, and whatever version comes after that. I could care less the number.
35.
Yeah, that's it, brother. Exciting stuff. So kudos to the team. Kudos to Helen, who's leading the effort for this development lifecycle, and everybody else that has contributed, because I think you're doing a fabulous job. Keep it up. I sure appreciate it. I also appreciate some of the discussion that was put out here recently on a critical security update that was released, that should be updated immediately for WP Touch. It was reported by Security. We know those folks, and it was later released again on WP Tavern. serious issue with privilege escalation, where it was allowing attackers to upload a backdoor shell of sorts that would then enable them to execute PHP and to change stuff. You didn't need any admin permissions to get this stuff loaded onto the server that's vulnerable. Bad stuff. It's in WP Touch 3.0. You can see the articles on WP Tavern as well as Security. Kind of bad stuff there. I mean, this is, you know, it happens, and it really comes down to, look, we've all seen vulnerabilities, and it really comes down to the responsibility that or the effort that the development team or plugin owner author puts into getting these things fixed. It happens. We all know that. When I see a lag between the time that something is disclosed in private and then ultimately disclosed publicly because it isn't being addressed properly, I have a major problem with that. So, folks, if we're developing stuff out there, man, let's get through these security issues as quickly as possible. Only thing that's hurting is you and anybody that's following you. So get it fixed and get it fixed quickly. If you're running WP Touch, get updated stat.
I mean, go ahead.
Oh, I was just remembering back to one of my own security issues that I had in a plugin. If you really have to, call Otto. He'll help you fix it.
Yeah, there you go. I have it fixed pretty quickly, in fact. Oh, man.
It's a little scary. Like, you know, the security is really finding kind of these vulnerabilities in some of the top plugins, and these are plugins that are installed by, or at least downloaded, you know, millions of times. They're like top 10 downloaded plugins, and this seems to be kind of a recurring pattern. So I hope everybody that has a plugin, whether it has, you know, 10 million downloads or 500, that you're kind of taking a second look at your code from a security standpoint, or maybe getting a second set of eyes on it, whether it's security or, you know, or someone else out there that you trust that kind of knows the security side of development, and just, you know, double check it. It's easy, like you said, Dre, it happens. It's easy to overlook it. If you're looking at the same code day in, day out, it's easy to miss something, right?
If you have a commercial plugin, hire someone to go look at it again.
If you're charging money, you should spend some money to have, you know, a Mark Jake with or somebody to go through and review it. And he does that for plugins, and he'll put his seals of approval on it from a security standpoint that's solid. So I think it's a great idea. I hope that these disclosures that security is doing kind of opens people's eyes and says, look, we need to kind of go back and make sure our shit's secure, because I think a lot of them aren't, and they don't realize it, fortunately.
Paying a premium to get another really solid developer to look at EDD, look at the entire code base over the course of a week, is one of the best decisions I made in the last year.
Hire Pippin. He's got nothing else to do. He'll overview.
Oh, man. Well, there's that. I don't know of any other security stuff going on right now that's pressing, but yeah, that's make sure to update here quickly. Well, let's get down to it. I want to understand this. I once had a development design shop around WordPress. I was frequently changing audiences as my work was getting better and becoming something of higher demand. But overall, how is it that we price things? How much should we be charging for a WordPress site, a custom WordPress site? This is a question I can ask you, Brad. I think, Pippin, you've been involved in that world for quite a while as well. And interesting to see a post on post status released on that. What is your guys' take on this discussion around how we should be pricing our custom WordPress projects?
Yeah, it depends. that's just the article. That's absolutely true. It certainly depends. Like, it's we get contacts. I mean, being in the WordPress community, the range of users of WordPress is so large. Like, you have people that are running, you know, very small sites or private sites for their family or just for a few people, all the way up to Fortune 100 companies running really complex media sites. And CMSs are with WordPress. It's such a huge range, right? So when people contact us, and this is from when we started till now, I mean, it's all over the place. You know, whether they have a $100 budget, we had somebody contact us with a $5 budget. $5 is what they typed in. $5 their budget, and I'm like, really, $5? That's you're really bargaining here. It's so hard, though, because people, they want to know, all right, well, how much should it cost, or how much do I do? And if I just start throwing numbers out, I'm putting myself in a awkward position of, well, if I told you it's going to be $5,000 and we get into it and it's really going to be $50,000, like, then you're not going to be happy, right? So it's tricky. He makes it's a really great post, and anybody, I think, charging for WordPress services should probably read it, because it kind of outlines all the various angles and things to consider. Yeah, I mean, it's all over the place. Pippin, what's your experience? I know you do or have done some freelancing in the past. I don't know how much you're doing of it now with all your other products, but
I don't do much now. I still price things occasionally when I'm doing, if I do custom work for somebody on an EDD product or something like Philly WP. But I did freelancing full time for about 4 years. It's what paid my bills. Right. I never worked for an agency. I always worked for myself, and so I went through some of those struggles of figuring out how to price things. I remember pricing somebody at like $60 for a little customization project, and it ended up taking 8 hours. And that clearly didn't work out very well. I had projects where I quoted somebody, I think $500, and they said, oh, that's too low. Here, I'm going to charge you. I want you to charge me $5,000 instead. I was like, oh, what the heck? This is crazy to me. And there's just so many different aspects of pricing. Everything from how much time it's going to take you to what kind of work you're doing to who you're working with, there is no solid answer. I love this post that Brian put out. And to be honest, of all people to write a post like this, Brian is definitely one of the top people to do it in the WordPress world based on his own experience from when he worked with Infomedia to his work now with Range. And I think he freelanced either in between those two or prior to Infomedia. And so if it is something that you struggle with, or even that you just do, it doesn't matter. If you don't think you struggle with it, grieve it anyway. Maybe you'll find out that you're pricing yourself way too low.
You'll learn something.
You'll learn something, yeah.
Well, but, one, I want to say, let's not blow up Brian's head too much, okay? Because he's cool, but he's not that cool.
He's not that. I want to point out, he just quit IRC, so I think.
Yeah, he's like, I'm out. You guys are terrible. No, the dude's fabulous, doing great work, has been for a long time in various different capacities. So certainly a well-written and very thoughtful article. I think at the end of the day, the moral of the story is you owe it to yourself to set expectations beforehand. You owe it to yourself to vet the project, the people that are requesting the work to be done, and the resources that you have to put behind it. And you damn well better be charging for that shit, because it takes time to do that as well. So. Yeah, you're going to learn.
Learn from your mistakes. Like Pippin said, you know, you charge $50, you end up spending a whole day on it. I mean, we've all made those mistakes, and I always say, look, we're going to screw up on estimates or prices or scope of work.
It happens,
and
we're going to spend
some of that cost. But I always make sure when I'm done, I go back and review and say, what happened and why did it end up wrong? What did we do wrong that we could have done to fix that? And I make sure I learn for the next time. Like, all right, well, I wasted a day on this, but, you know, I learned a valuable lesson. I won't let that happen again, you know, and that's the only way you get better. So
it is absolutely what's kind of neat, because it is like software development. It is an iterative cycle. It is an iterative process. It's okay to make those mistakes as long as you're learning from them. Implement control so you minimize the risk of those things happening again. Because ultimately, it's going to come down to you losing money on every hour that you're spending beyond what you're quoting on these things. So, man, well put article, and I think you did a really good job of you know, really capturing every portion of what you need to be looking at when these projects are being put together. Sick. Wow, man. Another show that went by way too fast. So, you know, we've all been around a lot of events. I mean, we've done a lot of WordCamps over the years. We've helped organize them. We've sponsored them. We've spoken at them. We've gotten into very exclusive events. We can go down a list of different involvement with different events in the WordPress community we've been involved with. One thing that kind of bothered me was the release. I think it was today or yesterday, around the news around WordCamp San Diego 2014. And why it bothers me, maybe it's because it's a little bit closer to heart. I brought the first two WordCamps to San Diego. It was recently announced about in the last few weeks, within the last month, that WordCamp San Diego would be happening at the end of this year, end of Q3, beginning of Q4, September time frame, or early October. Now that's kind of cool. It's a little later than we've typically done it, or that the event has been held, which is usually held at the beginning of the year. Well, a few weeks post release of when those dates were going to happen or when the event was going to occur, they put out that it's now canceled. So now the event's being pushed to next year. Now, I don't necessarily have a problem with the event being pushed to next year. There's been other events that have done it and done it very successfully. I'll say Philly, for example. You figured, hey, look, we want to change the time frame when this is going to happen, so let's give it more time versus trying to cram everything in and make this awesome event happen in a short period. Let's give it more time, add the right resources, and make it a killer event. You guys crushed it. I think that would have been a great way to approach this same scenario. If there was any doubt that the event was not going to go off without a hitch or you didn't have everything in place, don't announce it. Because now you've moved that. I think it takes away from the credibility of the event and those that were really running it. So I'm not going to ask you for your take. It's on you if you want to voice your opinion on that. But I'm a little buttered, man. That sucks. Yeah,
I mean, it's unfortunate. Obviously, for you, since you're close to it, I can only imagine. Like, if I had run, you know, if I had stepped away from working at Philly and something like this happened, I would be butthurt too, you know. So
yeah,
you're right. I think something probably went down. Maybe some organizers backed out or fell off the map, or you know how it goes. Like, it's such a process to organize an event.
It is,
And it's all about the people you're working with. So something probably changed that doesn't necessarily need to be out in the open. But you're right. It's the same situation. Like, they wanted to move from fall to spring. We had the same dilemma with Philly. Is like, do we do another WordCamp in 6 months or do we do it in 18 months? And 18 months sounds like such a far time, but that's what we decided to do rather than try to rush it. So hopefully they'll bounce back in 2015 and have an awesome event. I know the time I went, the last one you organized, I think, Dre, was an amazing event. I mean, the community on the West Coast is so awesome. So I'm sure they'll bounce back, and I expect 2015 to be pretty awesome.
I hope so. I will certainly support 2015. I will be there. It's right down the road from me. But I guess that was my way of venting, going, damn it, next time just close your mouth until you know it's going to happen. Well,
you lose confidence.
I think we just crushed the news, man. That's pretty awesome. I think we need to move into this week's Bart Tricks.
Let me show you a Bart Trick. Yeah.
Man, in Dradcast tradition, I don't see anything for Brad in the show notes.
I have something. I just didn't put it in the doc.
Ah, you're hiding it.
You're getting sneaky, sneaky.
Why don't you kick us off, Trey? What do you got over there?
I've got a plugin that I saw in, speaking of West Coast WordPress geeks, in the Orange County WordPress group on Facebook. Someone had pushed out a plugin called WP Core Plugin Manager, and this is a tool that allows you to manage collections of WordPress plugins and then quickly install them on any WordPress site. So you can generate these collections. So say you've got these five or six plugins you know that you want to install in any WordPress instance. You can collect them. It stores them WPCore.com, and then you import them to your WordPress site and with a collection key, and it loads all the plugins for you. So it's more of a time-saving tool. I just thought it was kind of cool to aggregate these things. We've seen with the advent of in plugin features and integrations, I think we're going to see a lot of these types of things happening. We've seen it quite a bit, I'd say. I think that this is the type of plugin that allows you to do this without any specific plugin. You kind of pick and choose what you want to use. So I mean, look at all a Jetpack, right? They've got 50 different features and stuff that you can put in there. I think that this is kind of a generic way of doing that.
It'll be really slick for anybody who sets up sites frequently that are always on top of the same plugins or dev sites or anything like that.
Absolutely.
I haven't actually played with it yet, but I was looking at it. It looks pretty slick. The name's a little confusing to me, but
definitely.
That's okay.
Yeah, I think they could have stayed away from WP Core, but realistically, who knows WP Core, right? Like, it's our subset of the community, I think. So
a few people said something about that. Right? I think they were CCing you too, Pippin, since you're on kind of the plugin council there.
I got pinged on it this morning. It was actually the first time that I'd seen it.
Way to go, Pippin.
Way to fail, man.
It's all right. It's still a cool system. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. So there's my bar trick.
I'll jump
in. There's a cool little plugin that actually approved or published just a couple of days ago, and it comes from Hugh Lashbrook, and it's called Instant Featured Image. I really like this little plugin because it addresses one of my own little irritations that I've had with WordPress core and the WordPress UI, and that's when you're writing a post and you upload it, and you click the add media button and you upload, say, like 5 or 10 images, and then you insert them and you realize that you want one of those become your featured image. So you go back and you click set featured image and then you go through that process again. Well, this one just all it does is adds a little button for set featured image next to the insert into post button. Nice. And so it just allows you to do it simultaneously. It's really pretty slick. It's like 30 or 40 lines is the entire plugin, I think, and it works really well. I went and tested it right before the show, and it's a good little one.
Yeah, that sounds like it's just helpful. Oh, I just click it here, and it's done. It already sets it. Nothing else is to worry about. Very good.
Yep.
I like you.
Well, I guess it's my turn.
Do it.
I have a cool bar trick, and it's actually some code that company release, which seems to be a trend, but it's fun because it's code we're putting out there for everyone. So we released a little plugin that essentially will automatically create a featured image from a video. So if you have a if you embed a YouTube or Vimeo video and it's within the first 1,000 characters of a post, it will automatically go out and grab the image for that video from those services and set that as a featured image. Which is really cool. So it's just kind of an automated way to get a featured image of the video without having to do any kind of screenshots or anything. And Sarah Gooding actually just did a great post on WP Tavern that kind of details how it works and how it looks. So we'll link that up in the show notes. But it's pretty cool. The code's up on GitHub. It's just called Automatic Featured Images from Videos. And it's really nice if you do a lot of video embeds. It just kind of automates that process for you. So
simple. That's pretty slick.
I like that.
I think I should start using this.
You should use this. There's a few solutions, but they're all, it's what, you know, a lot of the plugins out there just, they're so bloated with, you know, ridiculous features. It's like, here's something that just does one thing and does it great. Like, this is it. So, and it's on GitHub.
How many video services did you manage to put in there?
Well, right now it's just YouTube and Vimeo, and it only works with full URLs. However, you know, obviously we're looking to expand it and also try to support kind of those shortened URLs as well. Sure. But right now it's just those two. We just threw it up the other day because we built it out for a client site and thought it was cool. So definitely something we'll probably grow over time because this is something we've done for other client sites and other services. It's all about the service and if they give you that information. Like both Vimeo and YouTube have an API you can ping and get those thumbnails. So it's right. All about if they give you that information.
That's pretty slick.
Very good. Contribute. Wow, so lots of events coming up, folks. I think you just mentioned one that you're going to be at here besides New York. Pippin, what's the upcoming event?
Omaha. It's the weekend right after New York.
Weekend right after New York. So we're talking like with the 23rd, 24th, somewhere in there. Actually, 15th and 17th of August, because the same weekend as Grand Rapids, which I'll be attending. WordCamp Milwaukee coming up next week, the 25th through the 27th. New York is actually August 2nd through the 3rd. San Diego doesn't seem to be having it in September, but Los Angeles does. So if you're on the West Coast, make sure to go get tickets, which are available now for WordCamp Los Angeles, September 5th through the 7th. WordCamp Europe was announced for September 27th through the 29th, and we had the announcement last week for Pressnomics 3, which is January 22nd. To the 24th, which is everything business and everything WordPress. A lot of great events coming up. WordCamp.org is your main hub for WordPress or WordCamp events. So if you're looking for anything in your area, go check it out there. Pippin, always a pleasure. You're in my top five, my friend.
It's an honor to be there.
Where can people find you, brother? What's the best way for people to get a hold of you if they got any questions or just want to say, damn, you're awesome?
You can go to pippinsplugins.com, or if you cannot figure out how in the world to spell Pippin, which a very large number of people cannot, you can type in Pippin, however you want to spell it, and type WordPress into Google, and it will find me. And that's probably the easiest way.
Love it. Well, thanks again, brother. It's been nice to have you on. Bradford, where can people find you?
I'm at the hotel. Williams BA on Twitter.
Holiday. All right. Well, I'm at Dre Maida. People are always excited about new features, the latest, greatest doodads. It's that level of interest that gets a catfish hooked with a tiny, shiny object or even a stinky earthworm. WordPress is coming close to releasing 4.0, an exciting milestone by number, but in the long term, maybe one that isn't revered for its major features, more for a number of great improvements on existing workflow. No matter the additions made in 4.0, like releases before and those that will follow, don't ever forget the real people creating real code and spending their real time. And this is the only way that we'll continue to improve. Don't take it for granted the amount of work that goes into every release, and instead of bashing, get involved, or at least drop a thank you to those that are doing the latter. For the Rad and Drad, I'm the Doctor. Thanks for joining us on episode 51 with Pippin Williamson. We're out. Booyah!
Booyah! There you have it, folks, the latest edition of the Dradcast. If you dig the show, make sure you pass it on. If you have content for the show, want to submit to be a guest host, or just want to listen to older episodes, visit the Dradcast website at dradcast.com. While you're there, make sure you click the iTunes subscribe link to catch us on iTunes. Don't forget to follow at Dradcast on Twitter, and we thank you for tuning in. Join Dre and Brad plus a new guest host next week.
Yes!
On another episode of the Dradcast. Yeah.